Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian Emhauser. You can find me and all the stuff that we do at Hawk Blogger, whether you're on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all those places. You can find us there. And this is Seahawks Saturday. So we get to hang out with my good pal, Jeff Simmons. And my friend, how is Florida treating you?
It's good, man. I've got to say, I love your country. So I went to get a haircut the other day, and like you can see, my beard is like the most clean and trim thing I've had in a while. And this is like 50-year-old woman wearing a Raiders hat. My favorite is just wearing the hat because it's cool. So I start asking her questions, and she starts going off about Pete Carroll and his kids coaching the O-line. Like, I don't know one. I don't know if so many people would even know that. She's telling me about Brennan Carroll and the offensive line coach. And she's talking about Chip Kelly. And I was just figured I'd ask her a question about Geno or something. And she starts breaking down the whole Raiders for me. So this is like a 55-year-old woman cutting my hair. Not only was it a good haircut, I couldn't believe it. So it made my day. It's a small world. So I've been really happy out here. And it's been a crazy week, man.
How are her feelings about Geno Smith?
She wasn't as mad about Geno. She was more mad about Brennan Carroll coaching the O-line. And the funny line is like, I understand why Seattle let Pete go. And I was like, oh, I'm not going to tell her I'm a Seahawks fan, or else I'm never getting out of this room. So
yeah. Yeah. I think one of the most devastating decisions of the offseason for any franchise was taking Ashton Jeanty instead of Armon Membu.
Yeah.
Like, you and I debated that for the Raiders. And I was like, I know Pete wants a run game, but they're going to have a way better run game with Membu and whoever they put behind him than Jeanty in the line that they've got now. And Membu looks like, you know, a perennial Pro Bowler, all pro kind of tackle. And Jeanty just looks like another running back.
Yeah, that's not a hindsight take, because we were talking about it. I think it was just there were such few blue chip players, and Jeanty seemed so cool with everything, all the buzz they had going on. It kind of just got overlooked, but it was a really bad decision. And their offensive line was fine last year. When I remember looking on paper, I'm like, I don't see a lot of like building block kind of guys. It was Jackson Powers Johnson and Colton Miller was a little older. And it just seemed so obvious and seemed so Pete. We've seen what happened with the Seahawks, where they took running backs before the offensive line were there. And that looked like a devastating mistake, because Jeanty was completely ineffective this year. It did not look good. And I had heard after the draft there was some unhappiness about that pick. And they did not have the infrastructure to take Jeanty. And Membu sitting right there. And Kelvin Banks was a guy who was really tied to them, because Jeanty was supposed to go earlier. And Kelvin Banks had a really good year on a bad Saints team. And that pick is just such a whiff.
Well, and it's also interesting, there's just another ripple effect there that had NFC implications, which is the Bears were reported to be the next team that were going to take Jeanty if he wasn't taken at six. And so they end up with Colston Loveland, who is reportedly their second choice. He's been great for them. If the Bears pick Jeanty, I mean, they have a better offensive line, so I think he would have had a better year. But I'm not convinced that the Bears would be quite as good if they had made that move.
Yeah, luck is a huge deal in the draft. And Swift and the guy they got in the seventh round, Manonge, it's hard to pronounce name, but he'd been really effective as a run duo. And Loveland took a while to get going, but today he should be like one of their number one options with a lot of their receivers banged up. And yeah, they would probably feel a lot worse passing on kind of the tight end they could get. They got a running back in the seventh round, and kind of shows it's the exact opposite scenario. It shows you build up the O-line, you can drop in any running back, and it can be effective versus the alternative, which is what the Raiders did, and they've completely made that pick ineffective.
Yeah, and switching gears to some of the stuff I've been I've been reading as you have, I think, scrolling and trying to watch as much YouTube stuff as I could about this game, rewatching the game, and I'm struck by a couple things, Jeff. I'm struck by Rams fans' reactions to this game. I'm a little bit struck by the way 49ers fans are reacting to this. Those are two of the reactions I'm seeing. I'm curious, like, What are your takes so far? What are you seeing when you're scrolling around reading?
Firstly, like, I'm overwhelmed. There's so much stuff I want to get to. Like, I just pulled up YouTube before the show, and all these clips just popped up on my YouTube that I haven't even got a chance to see it because it was the standalone game. We were up so late doing the pod the other night, and then yesterday I tried to catch as much as I could. But the one thing, just from our group chats, I'm in a couple of group chats with you guys, and the reaction of the Rams fans has been pretty surprising to me. And I haven't interacted a lot with Rams fans over the years. I know we've seen a couple guys, but the, like, entitled behavior and, like, the idea that they were robbed is striking to me. And, like, it's been the more overlooked that the refs robbed them. The team blew a 16-point lead and gave up a 2-point conversion where Eric's Albert's wide open. Like, that's for a lot to focus on why they'll one of our buddies this morning sends me clips of Ernest Jones went on the show with Shannon Sharp and Chad Ochocinco, and they're mad at Ernest Jones for complaining that the Rams were chirping them because Ernest had a bad game. Like, I can't wrap my head around some of these reactions from the Rams. There's enough. They've blown a bunch of these games now, and look, there were certainly some questionable calls on both sides, but the refs are not why they lost this game. And the fact that the takeaway from Rams fans seems to be that they were robbed and they were hard done by the league rule, that's not why you lost this game. You lost this game because you got sloppy.
Yeah, I think that's right. And like, I'm reacting to the same thing where, I mean, Ernest was, he was not talking trash about it. He was just he was basically telling people what happened. And so, you know, when Rams fans kind of caught wind of that, there's the reaction as well, like, Ernest played like crap. Well, I mean, I think Rams fans are also grappling. There's kind of a two-way street. I'm seeing some Rams fans who are just now saying, like, man, we're 4-4 in close games. And maybe there's this other issue that we've got to deal with. And I saw Eagles fans who are like, yeah, neither of these teams scare me. We'll be fine against either of these teams. And there's just a lot of delusional fans, I guess, out there. And I think we've seen the Seahawks pretty clearly without total rose colored glasses. I think we see where their flaws are. We see where they'd have trouble. But there was a tweet that I loved. I think I shared it out. Not everyone agreed with me, but it was a Giants fan. And the Giants fan was talking about, man, watching the Seahawks and Rams, it feels like I'm watching two teams that are playing in a completely different football league than my team. And I don't think the Seahawks used to be as bad as the Giants, and people misinterpreted my tweet that way. But as recently as last year, but, like, honestly, the last 10 years, the Bills, the Chiefs, the Rams, the 49ers, those teams seemed like they were on a different planet and we were playing a totally different game. So it was kind of a nice juxtaposition, like, to see that the Seahawks are now the hunted instead of the hunters.
Yeah, I had the exact same reaction when you sent the tweet to me. And even week one, I remember the Bills-Ravens game was on Sunday Night Football, and that was that insane shootout this year, if you guys remember week one. Right after the Seahawks barely put up 13 on San Francisco, I remember a bunch of Seahawks fans were like, my God, they look like they're playing a totally different sport, and really did feel like that way. And really, like, the last few years, at the end of the Pete era, even last year to an extent, like, our path was chasing that seventh seed. And that was always our path into the playoffs. We're trying to get the seventh seed. We're trying to hope to get in on the last week. And, like, we needed Detroit to beat Green Bay that one year. And then you'd watch, like you said, the Chiefs and the Bills play on the AFC and on, like, the Sunday night game or in the playoffs, and you're like, my God, we're nowhere near these guys. It's felt like that way for years, and not just because this year where the Chiefs are down and the Ravens are down and the Bills aren't the same and the Bengals are off, but when you look at the DVOA numbers, and that's really the best measure of overall quality over a long time, it's been saying this for a long time. So It was nice to see this. And look, the Seahawks looked like crap for 80% of that game yesterday, and there's been some troubling patterns over the last month. But look, I'm sure other fans are watching that game, which everyone in the end indicated that was the game of the year. And they're like, man, I wish I had a team that good.
Yeah, I still think about that game on Thursday. And while everyone's reaction, I think the general reaction is, man, the Rams really dominated them. Seahawks were fortunate to win. And I think that that's a totally fair take. I can't really shake the reality that the Seahawks have played two pretty not great games in certain specific ways against the Rams, and were in both of them. And so my question is everyone else is that was probably a fortunate win for Seattle. I'm wondering, does Seattle have another level they can reach even against the Rams that we haven't seen yet? If they play good run defense for a whole game instead of a half, as they've done twice, does that Rams team look the same? And if they're not giving up explosive passes, which they never do. Anyway, I just wonder if the Seahawks, I think the Seahawks might have more to offer than people realize.
Well, I think the biggest area too is not just the defense, it's the offense. The offense we saw in overtime and the offense we saw in the first drive combined with better defense, and there was a lot of lapses on the defensive side of the ball of this game relative to the first game. But everyone's trying to make the thing that Darnold's turned the corner now and he's got the confidence. But the throws he made, when he was kind of let loose, he got four downs, he can go throw the ball down the field. They're not trying to hold him back. First half, he throws it only six times. In the second half, and even at the end of the game, they're being so conservative. I think if they can just let him play a little bit and let him play loose, and we've been calling for that for a while, I think there's a lot more this team can offer, because when they need to go down the field, Darnold looked incredible. And we haven't seen that player in really since the Washington game. And
can I ask you something? I gotta interrupt you there, because I wonder about that, because if he's playing like that level, how much more likely are they to have four turnovers again or something along those lines? And they were winning with a conservative, I think by your guys's call and other people, I don't see it that way, but a more conservative approach, and they rushed for 170 yards. Are we sure the right answer the next time they play is put the ball more in the air and be more aggressive versus pretty much what they were doing, but don't give up the yardage on defense?
I think what makes it hard is because the Rams are playing so much four down offense. Even McDonald acknowledged yesterday, it's a huge challenge to them. But the way Stafford's playing, the way they can run the ball, and I think my biggest takeaway is how good their offensive line was.
So good.
I think it's going to be really hard to play that game against the Rams. I think you're going to have to play as defensively like they did the first game, and I think that's just too hard of a challenge. I think to beat them, you're going to need to score a lot of points. And I think when we saw them tap into it, I think Shaheed is just a huge weapon that they still have not figured out fully. But I think his part of that, look, I don't want them to just drop back and play like they did where they're throwing a lot. But I think throwing on early downs and not making the tight window throws that they were asking to do, like that one where he got fooled on both those interceptions. It wasn't like the other games where he just made stupid throws. He just got fooled by man and zone coverage. He read the wrong reads. But if you look at the design of those routes, they're just right at the sticks. They're a pretty bad design where there's three receivers in one spot. I liked what happened where they were rolling them out and they were doing those play action shots. I don't think they need to do that all the time. I think they need to mix in the run. But I think you're going to need better defense, obviously. They got beaten a lot on third down. McDonald admitted he probably put too much on their plate. I can't comment on that. I have no idea how that would work. But they got beaten in coverage a lot more on third and longs when they had them. And the run defense early in the game was pretty bad. So I think they could play better defensively, but I think the idea of them trying to win that close game against that team, if they're going to go four downs, I think that's going to be really hard.
Would you be surprised to hear that their play action rate was one of the highest of the year?
Yes.
It was 31.6% in this game. The highest they've had all year. Wow. They had a 46% play action rate against the Cardinals when they won 44-22. But other than that, it is the fourth highest play action rate that they've had all year.
And some of their best plays were play action. The play to Barner was so perfectly designed. Ben Solak did a really cool video on how they used an earlier coverage to open that up. I thought a lot of the passes in overtime to JSN, to Cup, those were really well designed. The first play of the game was just, he comes out, he rolls out to the left, he throws it to Barner in the flat. There's some open guys there. I thought those were their best. When they try to just drop back and he scans the field, other than the 2-point conversion and down near the goal line, he was struggling. But I don't think they can just go out and try to throw all over them. I don't think that's the style. Like, you saw how Walker affected the game multiple ways. But I think, like, even at the end of the game, they were just trying not to have him screw up, and they were throwing those screens.
Yeah.
I think you're just playing with fire if you're going to do stuff like that.
I very much agree in that scenario. As far as, like, a game plan to enter, I'm not quite there where you guys are. And I realize I'm in the minority, but I'm not yet sure. And it doesn't mean that I'm actually sure the other direction. I'm not yet sure that the right way for Sam and this team to have the best chance to win is for them to open up the passing game more. Like, I think that invites the Rams pass rush, which is really, really good. Kobe Turner was a monster in this game.
He was.
I thought Jalen Sundell got really ragdolled a few times. Like, that, there was some Joey Hunt level, like, knocks into the backfield. Zabel too, for sure. So I think it invites the best part of their pass rush and their pass coverage. And you're kind of thrown in the teeth of the defense. I like them trying to get the ball. I think Ken Walker and, like, making him a focal point was a good plan. There's two other things. One, I think Clint Kubiak is getting a lot of praise, which is funny because I know there's a lot
was
of
not happy with him. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, he's getting praise for specific play calls more than the overall game plan. I think your criticism is the game plan.
I think I would agree with that. I think some of the best calls of the game were the stuff that we were calling for a lot of the night, and just the, if you watched Ben Solak break down the Barner touchdown, like, that's brilliant coaching. He used the exact same formation, figured out what the Rams are doing, and it was great. The Walker play was just a really cool, the screen pass. But I thought just a lot of the mistakes were made that could have been helped by coaching.
Yeah, and I think that the point I'd make about the plays that worked is that I give credit for Kubiak for breaking – for breaking tendencies. So even the first screen pass to Ken Walker, that play, they've run that a million times, and it never is a screen. It's never what they did on that play. It's either a run out of that, or it's a pretty quick slant to the field side. And so that was a tendency breaker. I noticed it right away. That was cool. They had a tendency breaker on the Barner touchdown, right? Like, him peeling off instead of going the direction he normally goes. Yeah, there was a few. But the thing that I didn't see as much, Jeff, was double moves. And I can't really say that I've seen almost any of those this year. Maybe the under center stuff doesn't really go with double moves in the same way. But the Rams play such cheating defense.
They sit on the coverages. Hasselbeck said it on your show.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the thing that annoyed me, because it felt like they're sitting on everything. And even the interceptions were them just jamming right at the line to gain. And that's the stuff. It's like, why were you designing routes to beat that over the top with some of the guys they have? And maybe they were. Maybe I'm just wrong. But when Hasselbeck said it last week, and he knows way more about the X's and O's than I ever will, that stuck in my brain, and I thought that would be a big part of their system. The way the whole coverage is based on cheating. That's exactly the way to beat that.
Yeah, I'm getting some random Facebook chatter. I gotta ban somebody.
Yeah, I saw that in there.
That's something I'm going to ask them about, because it felt missing to me. And the Barner move, even though that wasn't it was a double move, but it wasn't necessarily like a pump and go kind of thing where Darnold. Yeah. So Cam Kitchens bit on that. And that's why Barner was so wide open. I think Barner deserves credit for that catch. That was not an easy catch.
No, that's over a shoulder moving full speed. That was really impressive.
And for a guy that's not the fastest player, for him to get downfield and for him to have such good hands, man, I think that's his sixth touchdown on the year. Like, he's doing a lot more than a fifth round tight end usually does.
No, I remember when we were studying him in the draft, we just liked him as a blocker coming out of Michigan, and he's a far more complete receiver than I would have guessed coming out. That feels like a complete steal. He's playing like a second round level player. And they're talking on the broadcast that the Rams don't fear him and they don't respect him, and that's why they're sitting on the coverages. I don't think that's what's happening at all. Like, going from what Noah Fant used to bring you to what Barnes brought you as the number one tight end has been such a pleasure to watch.
That's a great point. That's a great contrast. I mean, that tight end room, Eric Saubert at the end, like, it's just a lunch pail crew. And, you know, you'd love to have Elijah Arroyo in there, and you'd love to have him kind of, you know, accelerating into his end of his rookie year. They got to figure out who they're going to bring back. Like, they get one more regular season call up, then they get two more in the playoffs. Arroyo, Barton, Horton, sorry, not Barton. Arroyo, Horton. I think there's another guy I'm forgetting, but we'll kind of see how that plays out. I'm curious when you hear of the general take about this game. What resonates the most, and what like just kind of like gets you goat?
Well, I'm not seeing this from like, I saw this from some Rams writers, and a prominent Rams writer called it the worst officiated game of the season. And to me, I'm like, that is perplexing, because we even had to talk like objectively between us. We didn't even know what the bad officiating calls like were. We had to like, what were people so upset about? And we couldn't even figure it out. And look, there was definitely, like, I can see how someone was mad about the two-point conversion or that illegal man downfield that Jaren Reed might have pushed. But I've watched games where, like, the ref called an extra point that didn't go through and said it went through. Or there's been some egregious officiating this year. Even, like, what happened to JSN at the end of the Colts game last week, where his helmet gets ripped off and they don't call it. He gets tackled. To say it was one of the worst officiated games of the year was laughable. And the Rams fans are just leaning into that angle, and I think it's just undermining everything that happened. And this was not Super Bowl 40 or anything like that, where the refs just completely overshadowed. That's the worst officiated game I've ever seen. I'll never get over that game quite a bit, but that's just really irking me. And it's not just, if it was just fans or bloggers or things like that, like, I can understand it. But to see like Arash Marchese, who's been covering LA sports for a long time, call that out, or like some of the LA writers who I don't think were particularly effective at reporting this week with all that Puka stuff going on. And to keep pointing out the officials, you guys couldn't cover Eric Saubert on the game with the game on the line. Just shut up.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, agreed. I'll say this, and I say this too often, you know, I complain about this all the time. Having to rewatch and listen to Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit, it is brutal. This is one of the best games you'll ever see. And it sounded like we were watching, you know, a documentary on dental equipment. Like, it was when Rashid Shaheed returns that punt for a touchdown, Al Michaels sounded more confused than he was enthusiastic. And I'm like, it was just, and even like at the end when they win, it just, there was no emotion. There was no meeting the moment. And I think it's a terrible thing for the sport when you've got two guys that are so bland calling like a primetime national game.
Yeah, I really struggle. Like, I grew up the son of a sports reporter, and like we love like the old sports broadcaster. Al Michaels was like the guy we've all loved for years. And to see what he is kind of now, where he's kind of just milking it and kind of going through. He's an old guy. He's almost 80 years old. But like, Al Michaels was my favorite growing up. And to see like the version of him where he can't really see the play, he's got no emotion. And like, it's really hard for me because I grew up just adoring this guy. And so many people who hadn't seen him just see this version like, Al Michaels sucks. And then I get mad. But the current Al Michaels is just not a good broadcaster. And he shouldn't be calling games of that magnitude. Like, Joe Buck got crushed years ago when he called, I think it was the helmet catch with like the lowest energy all time, and he's really learned from that. He's gone better, but Al, at this point, he's struggling to see things. He calls things completely wrong, and yeah, I know his voice is always just sentimental to a lot of people, but just watching him now, it's a different guy. And yeah, I can get why anyone wouldn't like him.
One thing I'm amazed by, I'll give him credit for, is the travel during the NFL schedule gets me. Like, it's rough. And for an 80-year-old guy to be traveling around the country every week and doing these, it's impressive. Like, I get that. It doesn't mean I want to listen to him anymore.
So, no, like, he was so good in his prime. And like, it's just like, we see it with coaches and players. Like, there's a point where you just, even Tony Romo's kind of falling off a cliff. And Al is 79 years old. I think he needs to just play golf and do something else.
I think they got to stop with the quarterbacks, and they need to bring in the offensive linemen. Yes. They need to bring, like Jason Kelce, like guys that have some personality. And I don't know, man.
He was really good. JJ Watt. I don't know if you've heard him call a game.
I don't think I've heard a game with him yet.
He's really, and he was such like a boring, like Russell Wilson style, like robot personality. He's really good. I think the O-line is the next level. It's like the managers in baseball are always the catchers. They see the whole game. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think that's the O-line. Like, I think that would be a good take.
So as we kind of look at where the Seahawks go from here, I am curious, Jeff. You know, we got a couple days from that game. We have this awesome weekend. How nice is this to just have no worries? And, you know, we got the Carolina game ahead. Where's your mind go, man? Where does your mind go for what needs to happen?
So it's going to be very fun to cheer against San Francisco on Monday night. I don't know how much Philip Rivers will be able to do. I don't know if they can do that game plan again. But the worst part about this whole game was that the Niners fans and the Niners players were cheering for the Seahawks. And it's like cringe because I saw George Kittle and Kyle Juszczyk celebrating Eric Sauber as a former Niner. And it would be so great because they need to go 3-0, I believe, to win the division. And if they lose to Indianapolis this week, it would be so much fun. I'm going to watch that Tampa-Carolina game. I saw Tampa live, who looked pretty bad last week. But all of a sudden, that might not be the Seahawks, but Carolina becomes a huge opponent for us next week if we're going to get this number one seed. And so I'm going to watch that game pretty close tomorrow.
That's a 10 a.m. game for people wondering.
Tampa Bay. That becomes a really important game, just a number of levels. Yeah, if the Seahawks are the 5 seed, that you're playing one of those teams. And if the Seahawks are going to be the 1, you better beat this Carolina team that did beat the Rams. And they've been insanely up and down this year. They've had some crazy wins. They've beaten Green Bay. They've beaten the Rams. And then they lost to New Orleans twice. And they lost to New Orleans twice in ugly fashion. They've lost some really bad games. So that's going to be fun. The Eagles play today. I think I'm going to watch. The Bears-Packers are tonight as well. So I'm curious what the Packers look like without Parsons. We're still waiting for Caleb Williams to win against a big opponent. I think that's a really fun game. And there's so much more action now. We figured we were just going to be set in. I kind of expected the Rams to win. And I figured, okay, we're going to be focused on this 5 seed and then go from there. But all of a sudden, there's so many balls in play here. And we just get to sit back and watch it. And I'm very excited to these next 3 days to watch football.
Well, so I want to do something real quick to get a feel. All right. So the reality is I'm trying to figure out our rooting guide, because if the Panthers beat the Bucks twice and they lose to the Seahawks, they win the division.
Yes.
I was just looking at this. So if they lose this game, then they will need potentially to beat the Seahawks in order to win the division. I'm looking here at, yeah. Well, actually, if they lose this game, wait a second. If they lose this game to the Bucks, it looks like they would pretty much lose the division, even if they beat.
Yeah. They play again in Tampa, I think, week 18.
Yeah, I'm looking at the playoff machine right now. And it says that if Tampa Bay wins this game, and then they, you know, Tampa Bay wins against the Dolphins next week, and even if they lose the final game to the Panthers, they will win the tiebreaker.
Yeah. Because the Panthers lost both division games.
It's best win percentage in common games is how far it gets in the tiebreaker for them. So if that's the case, Jeff, then are we rooting for the Panthers to lose this and for their season to pretty much be over, to be kind of eliminated?
I think so.
I thought we were cheering for the Panthers so that they wouldn't need the game against the Seahawks, but it seems like it's the opposite. I'm going to have to go back and like quadruple check this, but that's what the playoff machine's telling me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think because Carolina lost both to New Orleans, the division record, or the common opponents would go to Tampa. And if Tampa wins, the Seahawks game becomes irrelevant to them.
It's interesting, man. And I'm just double checking one thing.
Yeah, in the meantime, the Niners are the key thing now because the Niners play the Colts this week, the Bears next week, and then the Seahawks. If they lose one of those two games, the Niners just can't be the number one seed. Obviously, they're going to be motivated no matter what to try to stop the Seahawks, even if it's plain spoiler. But it's going to be very fun to root for the Colts and Bears the next 2 weeks.
I'm so I cannot believe I really can't believe the Panthers could be eliminated this week.
They can't be eliminated. They just I think they still would have to lose week 18.
No, they wouldn't.
Really?
That's what I'm getting at. That's like causing me to do all this extra looking around.
Wasn't there a playoff clinching scenario?
Not this week for them for sure, but
I'm pulling up playoff clinching scenarios.
Yeah, so I mean, I'll just show you what I'll share my screen. I mean, for what it's worth, and
they don't have Tampa as a clinching scenario.
Okay, they don't.
They don't.
All right. Well, here we go. I'm going to put this up there, and we can look at this together for real quick. Oops.
Yeah, I believe Tampa has to win next week to eliminate them.
So I'll make it a little bit bigger. So this is looking at week 16. And that's so beautiful right there. Seahawks already beat the Rams. Here's the Panthers, Bucks. All right. So if we have the Bucks winning in this week, okay. And then we go to next week, we have the Bucks winning against the Dolphins. And we have the Panthers beating the Seahawks. Okay. Even if that happens.
So what I understand is Tampa has to win the two games to clinch the spot. Because that scenario, you have them winning in week 17.
Yes. So
if you switch the Dolphins.
Okay. So that's the one scenario where like, so yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If what's his name, Quinn Ewers can beat the Bucks, then they don't deserve it anyway. But
I know.
This is, when would that game be in week 17? I got to look that up because
I think they're both early games.
Well, yeah, we're playing a 10 a.m. game. I'm spending way too much time on this because I'd love the Panthers to not have reason to fight in that game.
So they're going to have reason to fight, but I just don't know how good they are.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's certainly part of the rooting. And who are you rooting for? Like, who do you think it's better for the Seahawks if they win?
Carolina, I still think.
So if Carolina wins, it's better off for the Seahawks?
Oh, no, this week, I think Tampa. Yeah.
And sorry, because I was doing other things. Why is that? Why do you feel that way?
I'm struggling with this one because I can work my head around both of them. Because if Tampa wins this week, Carolina's playing for their season essentially next week. But it might be completely out of their hands. The problem is if Carolina wins this week, the game next week is kind of irrelevant till the week 18 game. So I think we want Carolina to win. We're talking through this.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm wondering. Because if they win, then basically they have to just win that last game.
Well, and either way, Seattle should beat Carolina.
Yeah. Yes, that is true. And
we're talking about them as the number one seed. The team's got to be. I know the Rams lost them, but they got to beat Carolina.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And that kind of gets us back to where we were, which is, so what do you want to see the Seahawks kind of address? Where does your head go in terms of, we need to see this thing change over the next couple of weeks?
I want to see an offense I believe that is sustainable, that I can believe can win a non-NFC South playoff game. Because I think to beat the Rams, to beat the Packers, even without Parsons, Eagles, you're going to need to have a more sustainable offense. I think if you're going into the 6 points at halftime or 10 points at halftime, I think you're playing with fire. And I want to see a more sustainable, whether that's a run game, whether that's play action. It still feels like a lot of times I don't know what this offense is in the last month. I don't know what they're trying to be. It was really since that Rams game, even like the Max Brosmer game where they just dominated. Their offense just still looked lost. And so defense, I think they can, with the 10 days rest, I still think so much of their defensive line. And the other area I'm getting a little worried about is Ernest Jones looks banged up. And he hasn't been the same player since that injury. And I heard Daniel Jeremiah mention on his show on Wednesday, and then I watched it. The Rams were picking on him. And so I don't think the Panthers have – but the Panthers, there's just too many easy throws with all that zone coverage they were doing. I want to see them play a little more aggressive on defense. But the Panthers have really good running backs in terms of throwing the ball in space. I think they need to tighten that area up of their defense, the way they're covering the middle of the field and how they cover running backs. I think that becomes a little more important. I think they need to play a little more man coverage on defense. And I want to see how healthy Nick Emanuori is down the stretch because, my God, he's such an important player.
Yeah, he just had a concussion, or they checked him for a concussion. And he was cleared. So I had to keep reminding myself of that as well. Like watching him walk into the locker room was like, oh, no. Like,
I know. Just seeing him walk up the field shook up like that scared me.
Yeah, well, I watched that replay enough that I was like, I don't see anything. I was like, maybe a collarbone. Like I just couldn't see anything that looked like a serious injury. So when they said concussion, I was like, oh, okay. And the fact that he's cleared to play, I think is really good. But yeah, I think for me, it's still the running game.
Yeah.
Like, and there is just some evidence that there's some stuff going on there that's positive. I don't know what else I really need to see from there. It would be great to see that their offense is humming. It would be nice to see the pass protection. I think the pass protection feels like it's eroded the past few weeks. They've been struggling a little bit more, and I think that's connected to Darnold. And they're going against two teams that do not rush the passer well the next 2 weeks. So do you think that the Niners are going to beat the Colts and the Bears? Is that your feeling?
I think they're going to beat the Colts. I think they're going to have trouble with the Bears. I think the Bears, the way they can control the line of scrimmage, like what they did to the Eagles – even though like there's so much focus on Caleb Williams, the way they've been winning is they're just dominating the line of scrimmage, that offensive line. I think that's the team that could give the Niners trouble because the Niners are banged up on defense. They can't really rush the passer. I think if you can play that physical game, though, like what the Niners used to do to other people, that was a way to beat them back in the day when they were healthy. I think now that they're not healthy, I think the Bears are going to give them a lot of trouble.
San Francisco is the 25th ranked DVOA defense.
Yeah.
And they're 26th against the rush and they're 25th against the pass. And they haven't even gone against a hard schedule. They have.
Well, they're beating all these weak teams. Yeah.
They've gone against the 8th easiest offensive schedule for a defense to face. And so I do wonder, like, what happens if Jonathan Taylor, has a big day on Monday. And if they can't rush the passer against Phillip Rivers, like he already is getting rid of the ball so quick, they're not going to touch that guy.
Exactly.
I think they're going to sit on a lot of routes, but I mean, I wonder if the Colts rise up in this game. Maybe that's the one everyone's assuming the 49ers win. Colts home kind of, I think this is their last stand. I don't know,
they have to win this game.
That would be so fun, man. What a Monday night. What a week.
I'm so excited to cheer for Phillip Rivers this week. And I don't know what their tackle situation is. I know they lost their left tackle in the Seahawks game. I haven't looked at the injury report. It'll probably come out today. But, yeah, if they can get the ball. Rivers got the ball so fast, it almost devalued that right tackle being out. And and now he's got another week to recover and get his feet under him. He's got an extra day to rest. If Jonathan Taylor can move the ball in the offensive line, could it has enough. I think they're going to – I think – the one thing I do is San Francisco is going to be able to score points. They're healthy right now on offense, and the Colts are still missing their corners. And
is Sauce not back yet?
So I don't think he's back. Buckner's supposed to be back, but that's where I like the Bears. I think the Bears can control the line on both sides.
Yeah. You know a name that I think I talked about this yesterday, but I got to talk about it again. I think the guy I'm most looking forward to watching in the next game is Riley Mills.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was really discouraged by his first, seven snaps against the Colts. It looked like he was just flailing. And then this game, I really liked what I saw. He only played six snaps. McDonald said he should have potentially played more. I think they're going to play him more. I think the defensive line could use some help. And Jeff, the kind of the snaps I was seeing was a guy that is really strong and really quick, and he could end up being a sleeper. like not in terms of just the draft. I'm talking about in terms of affecting the rest of the season. I saw enough for him in that game against a really good offensive line and good opponent. I'm like, if he's getting confidence, this guy could be a massive upgrade over the 10, 15 snaps Mike Morris was getting or Brandon Peely was getting or Quentin Bohanna.
There was one play in the game where he just shed the guard in the backfield, mm-hmm. blew up the run play, and the guy had to circle back on him. Like, that is far more dynamic and far more athletic than anything we've seen from, like you said, Mike Morris since he's been here. I still think he's going to be a rotational guy with all those guys they have. Sure. But I think it's very telling that they're willing to risk playing him at all when they could have just let this contract toll, take a whole season like Daryl Taylor back in the day. They got a full extra year of club control. And so they must be seeing something both like Aiden Durty was super high on him in the draft that they're willing to give up a year of club because GMs love club control and they would have had a full year of it. And so the fact that we saw the flash already in that game was telling because the first game watching him get pushed around against one of the best offensive lines was pretty hard to watch. And he didn't really play after he kind of got blown up. So I think, again, I think the fact that he's just out there is telling enough. And the fact that we saw that flash already in the minimal snaps in a game of that magnitude, now you're going to play again. Well, Carolina's got a pretty good offensive line. So you're going to see him play a little bit more. These are the kind of games you're going to want to kind of get him going if he's going to play in the playoffs. Yeah, he wouldn't be on my list for the guys I want to see the most, but it was definitely fun to watch him kind of blow up that one play already.
Well, who is on your list? Now I'm curious.
I'm just fascinated by Rashid Shaheed.
Hmm.
The last three games, let's go through it. The Atlanta game, he kicks that kick return back at halftime that just completely swung the game. Watching him live, the amount of yards he got just separating from guys, he was awesome. The Indy game, all the passes at the end of the game in the last drive, we go to Shaheed. The fact that Darnold was that comfortable, he sets up the game-winning kick. He was really good in that game. And then this game, when they're basically dead in the water, Shaheed takes it back for a touchdown, and then he does that reverse play that we've all been going crazy about and we all thought it was coming back and he puts them right in position for that burner play. Every time this dude touches the ball the last 3 weeks, it just seems electric. And I don't know. I would love to see him in like a downfield shot still. They still haven't figured out that yet because they're covering him so much. But just he is just the last three games, he's made a huge impact in winning all three of those games. And so every time I see this guy touch the ball, I know they're trying to figure out what's like the maximum amount of touches you want to get this guy because he's a bit of a smaller guy. But he just excites me every time he's touched the ball. And we've already talked about like John Schneider's best moves this year. Like all of a sudden that move, the last 3 weeks, he's arguably not saved, but it won all three of those games. And so
yeah. Midas
touch. Very high on my list. Who else would be
Little Josh Jones. I'm a little curious if he can do it 2 weeks in a row.
I don't know. I'm curious, but I still feel a little uneasy about that one. What happens with backup players typically is they can hold up for a game or two, but by the time we see a big sample of them, and we used to see this with like Minshew a lot or all kinds of guys, Stone Forsythe would always look fine for one game, and then you can see him for five games and be like, like Jake Curran looked fine. But Josh Jones was expected to be a pretty high draft pick. It's a little bit different. He's played.
And he has played almost a full season with the level he played yesterday.
Yeah.
Or 2 days ago. So no, it's not like he's never done that before.
So if people want to see some of like the coolest clips of this game, I'll give you a couple. Josh Jones holding up Jared Verse on the 2-point play is one of like, if Verse gets in the backfield and blows that up, they don't have time to get to the fourth read and they probably lose the game. The fact that he just owned Verse to the fun, that Verse was slamming his helmet after the game. Really cool moment.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to watch the coolest play of the game, and I was waiting for this angle because everyone was talking about his throw, and I put it on my Twitter, Mina Kimes put it on her Twitter. Watch like the coach's tape or the all-22 angle of the throw Darnold makes to Kupp in overtime on the sideline. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just an unbelievable catch by Kupp to get the second foot in. But this is where I'm talking about Darnold just looked like he was cutting it loose and didn't care. The angle and the throw he made looked like peak Aaron Rodgers. And we have not seen anything like that. I think it was the best play of Darnold's career. And if you watch like the high difficulty of that throw in that moment to just put it in the perfect spot with the defenders, it is such an unreal play. And if you want to have like a bit of a laugh, if you're kind of a spiteful fan, there's some cool videos of the Shaheed return. And if you watch the left side of the Shaheed return, The Seahawks actually did a cool thing where they actually double team both gunners, which is the guy that runs down the sideline. But the funniest thing is the guy who gives up on the play and is the one who just looks like he's giving no shit at all is Darian Kendrick, who's number 21 on the Rams. And watch him on the play. It will make you laugh every time. He was he was cut right after the Titans game, if I'm right, because their punt returner ran a touchdown back. But watch 21 on the side left sideline. He's giving like the worst effort I've ever seen. And we were all calling Kupp a sleeper agent, or Colby Parkinson drops the passes. Maybe Kendrick's a bit of a Seahawks fan now. But
yeah, that's funny.
Watch that play. It will make you laugh every time.
Yeah, and I'll say this, though, that I know exactly the player you're talking about, to Kupp, and when Darnold's getting drilled in the chest as he throws it, right?
Yeah.
And here's the thing. It was not that different than the throw he made in the red zone that was picked off by Kobe Turner. He was getting drilled. He is letting it go. And so to me, there's the good and the bad of that. Like, I see what maybe the coaches see is that, like, yeah, you want, like Mike McDonald's, like, you want him ripping it. You don't want him he will never make that play if you tell him to avoid a turnover. But if you're limiting the times that he's in that situation and you're putting him more in moments where, you know, there's a run or there's a rollout, like situations where there's less likely to be getting pressure in his face, like, or hitting him as he throws, then I think the Seahawks might be better off. But
yeah, that's fair. I think Darnold's best when he's rolling out to his left. There's a clearly defined read to him. That's why the Barner play was so good. And he's quick and decisive. And like the throw to Kupp where Kupp fumbles the ball, or the throw to JSN in the end zone, I think that's Darnold at his best. The best play of his career, I would say, I meant more like the highlight reel play of his career. The degree of difficulty of that throw was insane. Like that's a throw that all the Geno people last year were like, oh, Geno makes the coolest. But I'm not saying like the best the decision or whatever. That was more like the best highlight of his career. Aaron Rodgers used to do that stuff all the time.
Yeah.
And so, but I think like the throw that Darnold makes to decisive the JSN in the corner of the end zone on that in-breaking route, like that's the stuff you're talking about. That's the stuff he needs to be doing more. The rollouts to the left, the first play of the game is a perfect one. I would agree with that.
I didn't know there was football today, dude. Like NFL football.
Bears, Packers.
It's like Eagles, Commanders, and then Bears, Packers. I did not know that Saturday football started this weekend. That's how locked in I've been to the Seahawks-Rams game. Like, I had not looked past Thursday until now. That Bears-Packers game, do we have a rooting interest in that one?
No. I'm just curious to see what those teams look like, because those are the teams you're going to be seeing in the playoffs. I want to see what the Packers look like without – I would guess we'd want the Packers because the Bears are probably closer in the standings, but – kind of want the Bears rolling going into next week. I'm very motivated to see. So I don't have a rooting interest particularly. I like cheering against Caleb Williams typically, and I also like cheering against the Packers typically. So me and you kind of watched the last game in a bar in Atlanta. We don't know. We weren't watching it super close, but it was a really good game. And so I'm hoping for a good game tonight.
All right. So let's do this really quick. I'm going to see what the implication is for the Bears of – okay, if they lose this game and they win their next two, let me look at the Packers real quick. Let's assume Packers beat the Ravens. Let's give them that just in case. And the Packers beat the Vikings. So the significance of this game for the Bears is, oh my gosh, it's like the division potentially.
Yeah. None of them can clinch this week because they need Detroit to lose to clinch.
Yeah, so this would basically go from the 2 seed to the 6 seed even if they win their last two games. So I think we definitely want the Bears.
Yeah.
Partially because I also think the Packers home field, you know, you don't want to be going to Lambeau. Not that the Seahawks would have to if they're number 1 seed, but like get the Green Bay team knocked out early. I know that the Bears have been playing well. That team is not the team I'm worried about in knocking out in the playoffs, especially if they're coming to Seattle.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about that matchup.
Who of the teams outside of the Rams, who's the team in the playoffs you'd least like to see?
I still think it's the Packers. I still think I'm a little shook by that Matt LaFleur game last year. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have Parsons at that point. And yeah, he, I don't know, just seeing what he did to McDonald in that game still scared me a little bit. And just the way they can run the ball with Jacobs, and they're a really well-coached team. They've been there before. And Jordan Love is a streaky quarterback, but he can get hot. They would scare me more, I think, than the other teams in the NFC.
Yeah. I mean, I can't help but like think San Francisco. Not like I wouldn't want to face them.
No,
but
that's a good call.
Like, I almost feel like they're a tougher matchup. The Eagles are the other team you kind of bring up. Obviously, they won a Super Bowl. It's hard to knock out a champ, but there's a lot of flaws to that Eagles team. So yeah. I don't know. I feel like that team is one that I'd feel pretty good about, but I mean, the 49ers, what do you make of them right now? What do you make of them? Like, Ricky Pearsall's been hurt again, his knees acting back up. George Kittle and obviously Brock Purdy are playing really well together. The offensive line's been playing better. Like, what do you make of them?
I think they're just a hard matchup because I think their offense is very effective. I think Shanahan can scheme these guys up. He's one of the hardest coaches to play against. They've been still doing, and Brock Purdy's given Seahawks trouble over the years. Mm-hmm. And so the things that give Seahawks trouble are the quarterbacks that can move and extend plays. And he's been really good at it. Their defense is just, if the Seahawks were playing better offensively, I would feel way better about that matchup because their defense is the weakness of their team and they don't rush the passer well. But because the Seahawks offense has been so up and down over the last month, I don't know how great I feel about that part of the matchup. I feel the best about the matchups where our defense could take over the game and just, we have enough, we can win it. And I think San Francisco, because of how well coached they are and how much continuity they have on offense, I think that's a scary matchup in the playoffs. And just the idea of losing in this season to the Niners and their fans, that would just make me sick to my stomach. So I hope that doesn't happen. We don't have to sweat through that. But I think that's a good call-up. They might be second behind the Rams.
Well, and as we're looking at how these would go, so if the Seahawks get the number one seed, and I know everyone's like, we still got to win the last two games. We do, but we're going to have some fun and just talk about it because what else? If they got the number one seed, then they would face the lowest seed that won in the wild card games, right?
Yeah.
So that could definitely be San Francisco. It could definitely be San Francisco as their first game in the playoffs at home.
Yeah, well, unless the seventh seed wins, and unless that's San Francisco, you're looking at probably San Francisco or the Rams.
Oh, my God, dude, you're right. Oh, no. That could be the first game.
So there's a case. So there might be a case that being the five seed's not the worst thing.
Oh, my God.
Unless one of the NFC North teams wins in the round one, like the Lions could get it as a
second. If you're the fifth seed, then the Rams would be the one seed potentially.
Well, yeah, you just got to hope someone under you wins.
Oh, my God. So it seems actually like there's a decent chance that the first game you're going to play in the playoffs as the one seed will be against San Francisco, Green Bay, or LA.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a gauntlet to get through the seventh. The NFC this year is nuts.
Dude, I think that would be the toughest game.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't play the Rams in the NFC Championship. I don't think in this situation there's a way for that. Unless you know, the 49ers and the Rams won, then the 49ers would play the Seahawks because they're the lower seed, and then the Rams would play whoever, and then you could face
them. Rams would play the NFC North team, yeah.
Wouldn't that be crazy if they faced both teams three times in the same season? They basically just had an NFC West playoff to the championship. Like,
oh my God, I don't think my anxiety can deal with that.
I've not let my mind go to this place yet, but.
So that's our cope if they lose in week 18.
So here's what we'd want to happen, which seems very unlikely. We'd want a Carolina or Tampa Bay to beat the Rams.
Well,
and for the other top seeds to win, and then you get a Carolina or Tampa Bay coming to Seattle as the lowest seed. So if all the home teams, you know, won, then you get the fourth seed as opposed to the fifth through sixth.
Yeah. So you got to hope the seventh seed becomes like the Lions.
I mean, even that is not I would be like reveling in place facing the Lions. That's a tough first game, man.
And maybe the Bears, the seventh seed, Bears on the road. In their first playoff game,
I do not want to face the Rams in the first playoff game. So that is not what I want. I
was trying to convince myself, well, maybe the Rams will lose. Do you remember how the Rams Bucks game went when we were in Tennessee?
It's awful. It was awful. The Bucks have been just absolute trash. And so I almost think that might be the most high likelihood would be that they'd face the Rams in the first game.
Well, I don't know. I think one of the six or seven seed would have a pretty good shot to win.
Yeah. I mean, would you want the Packers or the
49ers? No, but I'm just saying, you said the most likely. I still think that if San Francisco plays the Bears in the first round, I think that's a 50-50 game.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. I want them to get that win, that first win.
All of a sudden, these standings, where they end up over the next 3 weeks, is huge. So these games matter.
Yeah. Okay. Now I've got my game face on for
like the game tonight. It becomes very interesting because then all of a sudden if you want to play the Bears in the second round, you got to really root for the Packers tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I want to play the Rams again personally. I do. I want them to beat. I do. I want them to beat them to get where they need to go, but I don't want it to be the first game. I do not.
No. We got to win a playoff game this year.
Yeah.
It seems too good not to.
All right. We got a couple super chats here. Taker610 says, I think Herb Street called Darnold Sam Bradford. I have done that multiple times, I admit.
He said Sam Bradford's never won a big game or something.
Well, that's true.
Which is, I was like, yeah, you're not wrong. It's just crazy how like different the conversation would have been on Darnold if they lost the game.
Oh, my God.
Man, yeah. Our conversation in our other group chat was saying we don't have a franchise quarterback. Like, we're nowhere now. The whole season's been a waste.
I think the calling them 2-point conversions is almost selling it short. Sam Darnold threw 4 touchdown passes in that fourth quarter in overtime, right? The touchdown pass, 2-point conversion. I'm not going to count the bounce off the helmet. But then he threw the touchdown pass to tie and then a 2-point conversion. All those are like touchdown passes. Essentially, he had to do the same action, and he had not been getting into the end zone very much. So
no, the red zone's been a problem.
Red zone's been a problem. I think that was a sneaky part of this game. I think red zone for the Rams, like not getting touchdowns early on, was a sneaky part of this game. It was the difference between last game and this game is the Rams were kicking field goals and the Seahawks were scoring touchdowns. Like that was a huge, it's amazing how much of a difference that made. J-Dash says, has Darnold missed Torrey Horton more than people talk about? Shahid has been great, but have you seen the Hawks complete a deep ball since Torrey got hurt? I do feel like he and Torrey Horton had a really good connection. I don't know how he would be utilized with Rashid Shahid here. Like I think people are probably overestimating the difference if he was hurt or if he was available.
Yeah, probably. Just the Washington game, I think, was the last game Horton played. And he had 2 touchdowns. One of them was that deep shot early, and one of them was just a cool route in the end zone where he was covered up and made a really good catch. But, yeah, it really feels like they had something going. And without him, they've missed that part of their offense. Even JSN's gone down the field less if the teams have adjusted to him. But just him having – you figure Shaheed was going to stretch the field, and they have not figured out how to utilize that part of the game yet.
Yeah. Chris Clark has gifted 5 HawkBlogger memberships. Thank you, man. Appreciate you. And Seahawks man, last one here says Packers and Colts win this week. 49ers and Rams lose next week with win versus Carolina. Gets us the number one seed without having to worry about 18. Packers and Colts. So the Colts would have to beat the 49ers.
The Rams aren't losing to Atlanta, guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the Rams are not losing to the Falcons. I don't. Yeah. And the 49ers losing to the Bears, I think, is possible. Maybe even a little bit more than likely. But I still think the Seahawks are going to have to beat the 49ers in San Francisco to get the number one seed.
Yeah.
Do you have any, like, last thing I'll ask you, do you have any concerns about not being up for the Panthers game after having this huge game against the Rams?
No, they're going to be motivated to be the number one seed. Like, getting a bye at this time of year is so big.
Yeah.
And they have a bit mini bye here, but I think these guys, a lot of them haven't touched playoffs yet, and I think you got to be fired up. If they overlook that game, I'm going to be really pissed off.
Yeah, I can't imagine how they could overlook the game, but two road games to finish the season, two road games to get the number one seed. Seahawks will almost certainly be favored in both. And Jeff, what are you going to do the rest of your day?
I'm going to enjoy some time outside before the football. Well, I don't know how much I'm going to be watching the Eagles game. I don't really care about the Commanders right now. But yeah, going to enjoy a time outside with my family and enjoy the weather I'm in for another 10 days. And then this is the best time of year for football. We got Christmas games this week. We got Saturday games next week. We got to sit back and watch all these games now. And every game has crazy implications on the Seahawks, as we just went through. So
yeah,
if you're still in fantasy football, this is a crazy time of year. There's so much going on if you're an NFL fan. I just can't wait to get into it this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Well, I'll keep an eye on that Eagles score. And if somehow the Commanders are giving them trouble, I would definitely hate watch a little bit of Eagles if that happens. But
oh, yeah.
All right, everybody. That'll do it for this week of Seahawks Saturday with Jeff Simmons. I'm Brian Emhauser, and I will see you all tomorrow. I'm trying to get a cool guest or guests for the show tomorrow. TBD on whether that will work out. But keep an eye out. We will do an actual morning show tomorrow, as opposed to, you know, we don't have a post-game show to do in the evening. So we'll do a morning show tomorrow, just like this one. And I think at least Rob Staten will be with me. And I'm hoping that we can get Griff, see Mike Spin Move as well. Have our old round table back to kind of talk about where the Seahawks are. All right, everybody, that will do it. Have a great rest of your Saturday. I'm Brian Emhauser.